This is RSBMB Update, episode 466, recorded Friday, May 23rd, 2014. Visiting Team Penguin. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update, one of the longest, if not the longest, running RuneScape podcast out there. Monsieur Shane 12088 is here this week.
And J1, J2, J3.
So, you're feeling a bit pressure off your shoulders, so that's always good. Maybe that'll trickle down through to the listeners. What do you think?
I need soda. Lots and lots of soda. And fried chicken.
Yeah, you did mention that, and we were a little bit wondering what exactly the fried chicken part played, but you can tell everyone later on about that. So it's been a rather interesting week for you, and for me as well. We got quite the interesting show coming up today, including ancient combat, things about the Elf City design document, and most importantly, episode of RSBMB Update Supplemental that is going to be included in this show. So you're getting two for one if you're listening to this. All right, so let's begin. Ancient combat. These were the abilities chosen in the Power to the Players poll about a month and a half ago, and people chose that they wanted high damage at the expense of hurting yourself. And that is what we got this week as the primary update of Ancient Combat.
Woo!
These are four or three threshold abilities and one ultimate for each of the combat types that deal immense amounts of damage. So I'm going to ask you, before we go into briefly what each one of these do, are you going to be using these anywhere?
Yeah, I'll use them. I feel like they add a little more, finishing move with what I have. And usually I can keep my health pretty high up anyway, so I'm not too worried about killing myself. I can use them.
That is true. Okay, so as I mentioned, we got three thresholds and one ultimate. The three for each attack style are based on tendrils, and that's what Jagex calls a little tendrilness. Tendrilness. You get these little tendrils, you know, popping up below you. They tickle at your feet and basically will deal damage to you and your enemy target. So, first up, Blood Tendrils is the attack ability for melee. 180 weapon damage to your target instantly, and then 90% of weapon damage over time to the target, and 25% weapon damage to you over time. Now, that one seems okay, I guess. Then we got Shadow Tendrils for ranged. Hits a caster between 2 and 5 times for 33 to 250% weapon damage. So that's a wide-ranging arc right there. And damages a target for 66 to 500% weapon damage in a single hit. So that one, you know, you hit yourself a bit. And once again, we got a range on the enemy on this one, whereas on the melee one, we do not. Now for magic, 100% weapon damage to the target, then three more hits as a combo attack of 125, 150, and 200 weapon damage. And the caster will also suffer hits of 25, 50, and 100% weapon damage. So. Now, we tested these out last night, didn't we?
Yeah, we, you, me, and Mike went to your home and we kind of smack each other's brains out for a while.
Yeah. So what was your general opinion of that in terms of these three?
It really does deal a lot of damage. I like them. You know, it's a risk reward. You have a chance of killing yourself instantly if you're too low, but it can deal a lot of damage. And it was good. I know you tried the blood tendrils. I did magic and Mike did the range one. And each one had their own little special unique thing, and we were all trying it out, including the crystal.
Yes. We'll get to the crystal in just a bit, because that does have one interesting property about it that we found that was rather amusing. So we'll save that. But I'll talk about the melee one, because I'm not sure what to think of this, because first things first, I said it deals 180 weapon damage to your target, which is nice, you know? But compared to the other two, it doesn't have a range of damage in much the same way that the ranged and magic one does, meaning it's always going to be 180%, and then the four bursts of 90 over time. So basically what I'm thinking is that the melee one is probably the one that's going to get the most use because of two reasons. First reason, it's more guaranteed and there's less of a gamble. Because let's remember here that the ranged one deals between 66 and 500% of the damage in a single hit. So that's a pretty big range right there. And then the magic one, 100%, and then it has its combo attack, which is also steps up in terms of effectiveness. So I don't think it's really fair to the ranged ability here to have such a wide range for the main target. I mean, yeah, over time they're going to even out in the amount of damage they do, because 2 to 5 times at 33 to 250% weapon damage could ultimately end up being the same as 180%. But the question is, for rangers, do you really want to take this rolling of the dice as a way of dealing a finishing blow? I don't know if I would. So I don't know if I'd use the ranged one, but I would definitely use the melee one, because not only do you hit the 180% burst, but while the damage over time is happening, you're also smacking your target with whatever weapon you have, and if that's a Drygor, that's going to be doing immense damage. Plus, since it's damage over time, you can cast other abilities as well. So I like the melee one. I'm not so sure about the ranged one, and the magic one is good too, I will say.
Yeah, magic was good. I think it would be better if I could sneer someone and then just use that, because they can't move. All the attention will just follow you anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But I think it's more of keeping you safe while doing extra damage. It's a really, I think it can be a very dangerous combo skill, where you hit this snare someone, probably with the asphyxiation, and then just manage build it up again, use this one, and then choke them.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's about it.
Are these thresholds we'd use on Slayer targets for relatively high-level Slayer?
Yeah, I liked it. I think maybe not like, you know, super crazy God Wars thing, because that may hurt you, but I don't know, if you're just doing a Slayer task and slaying some moderately high-level monsters or bosses, yeah, you can do it. Go for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd be a bit leery.
Dungeoneering,
I'd say go for it.
I would say dungeoneering may kill you more.
Oh, why?
Usually find, you always get the one dungeon has like 3,000 high-level food that nobody can, you know, eat enough. Then you get the one dungeon that's like, yeah, here's a herring. Knock yourself out. And that's, so, yeah, it's a give and take with that one.
I don't know if I'd want to take this to the Queen Black Dragon. Or things that hit high, like the Kalfight King. You know, just because...
Well,
you don't know if you're going to hit a lag spike when you're doing this. And, you know, you do need to eat in order to recover from this. And you and I both know, I killed myself multiple times while doing this in terms of the PvP sense in the house arena.
I don't know. I think it wasn't quite an accurate test for us, because we have a limited space and how many people we could fight. I think if we could, you know, maybe slay a monster or something and really see a more longer duration, we'll have more useful, relevant information on this.
Yeah, and
because you know, it was just like I hit you once, and then you're pretty much dead by the time I'm ready to use it, and so I had to hit Mike, and then Mike was, you know, all at full health when I was already half health, and it wasn't as great as a great test. I mean, it was a nice little run and about test everything out, but we could do more.
Ooh. And, you know, it was really interesting when I activated Vampirism and Soul Split. I mean, you can heal a bit through what you're being hit by from the blowback on these attacks. So you got to keep that in mind as well. Right? There's that. And, I mean, you could probably also just throw in a unicorn and there you go. Now, one thing I do want to highlight, two things that'll make these abilities more useful in the future, assuming the current combat system on the beta does make it to live game. And that is that on the beta server with Ports Armor and 99 Constitution, it is possible to have upwards of 11.1k life points. So you're going to have life points to burn away. And now with my just level 70 Varak Armor, 99 Constitution, I'm sitting at around 8,000 life points. So I will have roughly 3,200 more life points once these changes in the combat system make their way over to the main game. So that's point one. And now point two is that in the beta, whenever you eat, you will incur a global cooldown rather than a loss of adrenaline. So that makes it a bit easier to recover from using one of these abilities as well. So I think in the future, these will open up more possibilities. But right now, these really need to be used as finishing attacks. Because let's say you use one of these attacks, you deal damage, and you want to heal yourself with a piece of food. You will ultimately take yourself from threshold territory down to basic territory. And that's not something you want to do in mid-fight. I know whenever I'm in mid-fight, most of the time I like to queue up multiple thresholds one after another. So keep that in mind. Anything else on the combat ones before we talk about the Constitution group heal?
No, I don't think we have anything to say. You did test freedom when I was hitting you with this. I think you found that it actually freed you from my attack.
As with anything, it ends the damage over time, which is as expected. Freedom is supposed to do that.
Yeah, so, I don't know. Good to know.
All right, so level 91, Ice Asylum. This is a group healing spell that basically heals everyone in range for 1% to 7% of their maximum life points, depending on how close they are to the crystal. Okay. The total amount healed is 3 times the caster's maximum life points, including armor and other boosts. Now, this is very interesting because it brings the idea together that, you know, you might have, at some point in the future, you might have a mage debuffer healer, which is something I've advocated for a long time in RuneScape, and I think it's interesting to see this kind of stepping in that direction. So of these abilities, this is the one I'm most interested in. And you know what we found out with this is that if you're using this in a PvP sense, it will not only heal you, it'll heal your enemy as well.
Yeah, because so, it just says it heals everything within range. Although we should really test, I may test it in Castle Wars or something to really see if it heals everybody. But as far as we know, with the description and what we kind of saw, it kind of heals. You were attacking Mike and you used it and it was healing him too.
Yes.
Which I don't know.
So, I mean,
it was healing you pretty well too.
Yeah, and I mean, you got to be really close to it. Because 7% of their maximum life points, and as I said, right now I have around 8,000 life points, so that totals up to about 560 life points per tick if you're standing right on top of the thing, and that goes down accordingly as you move out of range. And I mean, it can heal 3 times the caster's maximum life points every 4 seconds. Now, I want to say this is a bit better than a bunny up because it is controlled based on constitution levels and whatnot, but I mean, it's not an outright huge heal in a way that you're going to, you know, bring someone from death or, you know, prevent that sort of thing. This is basically a way to add a bit of nice, either nice resistance on top of when you're getting hit by a Slayer creature or something, or maybe a boss creature. But I think in the high-level bosses that we have right now, based on the life points value that I just told you guys, I don't think 560 is enough to make a meaningful heal at a high-level bossing engagement, because every 4 seconds it's going to take you, in that case, it's going to take that case 16 seconds to heal 2,200 life points, which really isn't that great. So just keep that in mind. Nice way to add some resists, and that's the way I would class this healing ability at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm pretty much good with that. How about you?
Yeah, I think making it an ultimate, it's kind of hard. I think I find this probably useful if you were on Lunar Spell Magic and you were kind of trying to do the whole healing mage thing, but no one really uses Lunar to go heal your allies.
Yeah, and I mean, most like people I
use
said,
it because they want to use Group Venge.
That's something I'd like to see more of in RuneScape, is a support mage type thing. So, definitely.
Although I could
see
this becoming. I think this. Although I do see this could be used in Dungeoneering. After a little mini battle, and it's like someone has an ultimate, pop this out, and everyone kind of heals up a little bit. But in regular use, nah, you probably end up healing the enemy you're trying to fix up anyway. So, you know, I think it's also, you know, I think it's a good alternative for those who want to heal up, but the butterfly is on cooldown. They can pop this one out and heal themselves and anybody around.
Yeah. And that's true. There are many other great healing abilities and whatnot, but like they said, this is just the beginning of these abilities, and if you like them, let them know. If you don't, tell them why.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, next up we have some new Slayer monsters and their familiars that come out. The Nina and Smosh Paws can be assigned by Kurta for 50 Slayer points. And they drop ingredients that can help with summoning, and a couple of new mini pets too, including a whole wide range of dragon items, dragon weapons.
The ward, the hasta, and the throwing knife.
Yeah.
For anybody who isn't aware, the ward is basically a dragon defensive magic-based shield. Level 60, of course, all these. So in the current scheme of the game, really not that useful towards higher level players, but definitely good level up type item, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, they're dragons, so you know they're for the 60, 70 level people.
Mm-hmm.
But it was good. They look nice. Mini pets, they really care for them. Although,
yeah, same here.
Although they do have the familiars do have a little ability.
Yes, that is interesting. Basically, they will give you an accuracy buff and debuff your opponent's accuracy as well. So that is essentially going to make you hit harder on your enemy at this time. And that's a very interesting mechanic for familiars. I know it doesn't seem like accuracy plays that much of a role, but if, say, we were to get another one or two accuracy buffing items, I could see us maybe getting higher crits along the way somewhere. So this is definitely an interesting mechanic coming into the game, since it looks like crits are on their way out.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had a chance to try the familiar, though, nor the Slayer task, because I am currently saving Slayer points to upgrade my Slayer helmet.
Yeah, same here. I'm one away.
Okay, I think I'm two away, maybe. Something like that. I'm not sure. Anyways, so there's that. And in Tweaks and Fixes this week, we have the return of the D&D tokens to Treasure Hunter. So that means you can redo things like penguins, Dungeoneering sinkholes, whatever. Tears of Guthix. I think this is one of the more useful items that we've seen on the Treasure Hunter in quite some time in the past.
Yeah, go for it.
I mean, there's nothing compared to doing 4 sinkholes in a day. Nothing can beat that. I don't know. I just really like my sinkholes. And I mean, the more and more I look at it, if you don't like the idea of dungeoneering, it seems like sinkholes is the best way to train that skill. So that's always what I go for if I can with these tokens. Go ahead.
And this weekend is Dungeoneering weekend, too.
Oh, yeah, right. Thank you for mentioning that. You going to be doing any?
Well, duh. once I finish off this my Citadel task, I'm gonna be there.
Yeah, so, and double tokens from Dungeoneering and in Sinkholes, and 50% base XP from Sinkholes. So this weekend is the weekend to do Sinkholes.
And with the big batch of Dungeoneering updates from the Ninja team coming on Tuesday, it's going to be a great time for Daemonheim Adventures. So stock up on those tokens.
Yeah, I hope so. And like I said, Dungeoneering isn't exactly my thing. So Sinkholes is the way I do it. But it'll definitely be interesting to see what you have to think about that since you're past 100 Dungeoneering next week.
Oh, I am going to be Dungeoneering for a while.
All right.
Bug me, Shane.
Okay, sounds good. Another little change they made this week is the Fairy Ring interface. That actually has a favorite system now, so you can one-click teleport to your destination that you use most often. So that's very useful, because, you know, that list was getting pretty long of all the Fairy Rings and whatnot. So it's nice to see an update to old content like that making its way into one of these game updates. I think Fairy Rings are probably one of the most common ways of teleporting around the world. So definitely a good change, and really shows what Jagex has been doing with the UI, and they're not amateurs with their UI stuff anymore.
And one little minor note that's not here: if you click on the grand tree, you can actually press a number to teleport where you want to now, instead of before we had to click on it.
Was that this week or last week? Oh no, that was this week.
That was this
okay.
Week.
Good.
Yeah. I was teleporting. I came out of ports, and I was going to go to Grand Exchange really quick. So I went to the Grand Tree that I built, and I saw it. I was like, oh, this is nice. Sweet.
That's good. Two other little ones. Clan avatars can no longer be summoned in the Grand Exchange.
Oh, you're reading the stuff
right
now?
Yeah, I'm just going through a couple of these, and then we got something very good to talk about.
There's a left-click recharge option on the Fountain of Heroes.
Yes! That's good.
Why yes, Shane?
Huh?
Not for you and me. We have our own way of recharging glories, especially me. Giggity. It's called a familiar.
Oh, right. The geyser. Yes, right.
So, oh my god, so much
guys
easier.
Are tied in.
And let's see, what else was it here? I think that's one of the ones I care about. But yeah, now I keep mine connected to the spirit tree teleports. There we go. So,
sounds good.
Yeah, nothing really crazy, but I like that one though.
Very good.
Oh, I guess the damage buff from using Dragon Bane ammunition has been increased.
Oh, yeah, for the QBD. Interesting. I think most people just whack the thing with melee.
Whack-a-mole!
Yep. Alrighty. Well, that's it for the main update this week. But, as I mentioned, we do have something really special this week, and something very important to the RuneScape community as a whole. You guys might or might not be aware, but there's an organization called Team Penguin that tracks the penguins from the Penguin Distraction and Diversion. They track it every week, and they've been doing so for the last 300 weeks. This week, they posted their 300th penguin topic, and I chatted with Canada Girl, the leader of Team Penguin, for a bit to just figure out what the organization is all about and how they track these penguins down. So you guys can have a listen to this right now. This week we are going to be talking about something that some of you guys might be aware of and some of you guys might not. And that is an organization called Team Penguin, based out of World 60. And with me today is the leader of Team Penguin, Canada Girl.
Hi there.
So we're going to be discussing a bit about what you guys do this week and everything. But first, it's a pleasure having you on the show. And I want to take this first opportunity to congratulate your group on your 300th Penguin topic that went up last night.
Yes, thank you very much. And thanks for having me on. 300 threads. It's quite an achievement. And I believe quite unique on the forums.
Yeah, and I have been aware of the Penguin group since it was in its 50s. I'd never really gotten involved with your group, primarily because of other things that I would be doing at the time. But it's something that I've watched closely, and we've been wanting to have you guys on for quite some time. So let's begin. What exactly is penguin hunting?
Well, it's one of the original D&D's distractions and diversions of the game, and it's a great way to get free XP. It's a weekly D&D as well. And of course, there's now tokens, so you can replay at times. And basically, you can, throughout your gameplay, spy upon disguised penguins that are roaming around RuneScape. And while speaking to either Larry or Chuck at the zoo, you can turn in your points that you've spied for free XP or GP. And it's free XP on any skill. It's any skill of your choosing, which is kind of a nice bonus.
Which is very great for leveling up skills that might be too expensive for you. Mm-hmm. You might just totally hate, mm-hmm. or you're rushing to get a certain level. So it's a very nice thing for everybody to do. So
yeah.
Which quest does this unlock after?
Well, actually, you can spy penguins without a quest, so any player can really do it. The only thing you have to do first is speak to Larry at the zoo, and he's in the southwest corner. And after you have completed Cold War, which is the first of the Penguin series quests, you can then spy the same 10 penguins every week, but you would get 2 points for 5 of the penguins in a week if you spy all 10. And then after that, the second quest in the Penguin series is Hunt for Red Rattuber, which allows you to spy the polar bear for an extra point during the week. And then the third quest in the series is Some Like It Cold, which unlocks the Ghost Penguin, which allows you to get 4 points for the week. So you can actually start off, and it's such a fun diversion. People who are new to it are always like, what was that moving crate that just ran past me? People sort of join for that aspect, or, I saw these things running around the game. And, what's behind it. Exactly. You see a toadstool with flippers, you kind of wonder what's going on. Yeah, so it's a lot of fun to spy.
So if a player comes in to the game of RuneScape and they see a penguin and they spy on it, they'll get just 1 point, correct?
Correct, yes. And if then, they haven't done it, yes.
Right, and then you said you add on the quest and you get 2. And then the following quest, you unlock more penguins and the polar bear and then the ghost penguin finally. All
right. That's right, yeah.
So how many penguins does this give us in total?
Well, there's 10 penguins to spy each week, plus the polar bear, plus the ghost. However, there are actually 67 penguins possible.
Wow.
And each week, exactly, according to a pattern, which we're in the process of cracking, yes, Mod Raven, we are, it's a combination of which penguins show up each week. And there's always 5 1-point penguins and 5 2-point penguins. So it'll be a mix of those.
Right.
And
so,
you get the 2 points for the Cold War.
Yeah. So that, I guess, brings us up to 16 total points with the Ghost Penguin. Am I right?
No, actually. 10. It's 15 points with Cold War. It's 16 points with Hunt for Red Rattuber with the Polar Bear. And then it's 19 points total that you can do in a week.
Ah, all right. Well, there goes the bad math in my head, but anyways, so 19 points a week. And would you happen to know offhand how the experience is calculated if people choose the experience option when turning in penguin points?
Yeah, it's your points, number of points you have, times 25, times the level of the skill that you choose. So if you are level 10 in something, it's 10 times points times 25. So it can actually add up quite to some quite high XP. I mean, I'm 94, I think, summoning or something. I'm in the 90s for most of my skills. And I take 50 points that you can cap at. You cap at 50 points. So you can bank your points before you have to turn them in. Or, you know, you can turn them in at any point you want, but 50 is sort of the cap, and then you have to turn in. But if you do 50 times 25 times 90-plus skill, you're talking over 100,000 XP.
Which is very nice skill. For something like summoning very or nice. Construction, the expensive ones. So this is definitely something that I guess you should be trying to do weekly if you have the time.
And when players come into our FCs, they commonly say that, you know, oh, I'm trying to level up XYZ, or I've got a goal for this. I just need 3 points, or I just need 4 penguins, or actually spying a penguin is also one of the tasks in the diaries. So players will also spy a penguin for that. I believe it's the Ardoin ones, so the Ardoin ones.
All right, that sounds good. Now I want to delve into a bit of the operations about Team Penguin. I guess the important thing to start off with is, how was the group founded? What's the story?
Well, it was basically on day one, which was back September 2008, and it was sort of a frenzy of what were these things running around RuneScape. It had been announced weeks or days prior, you know, in the news posts that this was coming, that you could spy penguins, and I remember reading that. So on the actual day that it started, everybody was just kind of running around trying to figure it out. And a few people had posted in the new forum, the D&D forum, saying, join my chat, join this as any new event that comes up. And there was one chat that just became really popular, and it was Riot's. And there was a bunch of us in that chat that started helping out and organizing and sort of, you know, staying longer and such. And that became a really, really popular chat to the point where we had to expand and had 5 overflow chats as well. And then over time, you know, Riot's left Penguins, left the game eventually. Our overflow chat owners, they left the game, they retired. We changed chat names, etc. So after a little while, I ended up being the chat owners of the current chats that we have now, which aren't the originals. And I've been around since day one, pretty much, and sort of been running it for a while with the team. So it kind of grew out of a few different groups and different people. And we started off with the thread, too. That was on day one, which was the first thread, which was Penguin Locations.
Version 1.
Next week, we start. Yeah, well, there was no version one back then. It was Penguin Locations. And then the next week, we said, oh, well, Penguin Locations, version 2. And then it just, well, continued to V300.
And here we are.
Yes, here we are.
Excellent. So now, given that we have 300 weeks of form threads with penguin locations in there, common penguin locations of where the penguins might be, what exactly do you guys do each Tuesday for someone who, you know, might just see the form thread and wonder how this is all figured out and how everybody keeps track of where the penguins currently are, what's the process on Tuesday when we reset, that sort of thing?
One of actually the great things about the group of people, you know, over all the years of all the threads to work on penguins is that they do make it seem so easy in a sense. So many players just come in and assume penguins spawn in Yanil Wall or that they're in Arty Castle. They just happen to be sitting there and it's so easy. But there's a ton of stuff going on behind the scenes, one of which you got to experience yourself Tuesday night. Tuesday night, North America time, of course, is our reset.
Yep.
And we plan well in advance. As I mentioned before, we're trying to crack the pattern because Maud Nancy, the original curator of penguins at Jagex, had a very simplistic pattern, and which we cracked very quickly. So we were able to predict the penguins. So in that regard, we were able to plant people at certain spots at reset. I could have the thread written on Sunday and be ready to go. She heard we had cracked it. So she kindly decided to shake things up a bit, and with no prior warning. That was a fun week, let me say. And yet to 100% crack it, about 99%. And we have a whole team of people who are just working on cracking the thread. So it's one of the fun aspects of penguins. So that's going on behind the scenes. And we've even developed automated systems to predict each week's penguins.
Oh, wow.
Et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, it's quite complex. We also have a group of players who've gotten involved in penguin movement, which gets into coding and the whole how do NPCs move in the game. And they've discovered all sorts of things. And so we can actually tell how a penguin's going to move and how to stand next to a penguin or how to block a penguin in that regard. And then I have the thread work. I have all sorts of files and penguin files and piles of paper that sort of put together my list for the week, and then all the different posts that have to be individually done. And then we meet actually at 1 hour before reset. Half an hour actually before reset. And we meet in Edgeville, as you came and joined us
yep.
this week, north of the Edge Bank upstairs. And we have a reset meeting. And basically we just, you know, let everybody know of any information that's going on. Our penguin tours, they're also planning. We have a group of people who are involved in our tours, our tour buses, and they run on reset night, and they do a lot of planning as well, and how their routes are going to be planned out, and who's going to run ahead and scope out where the penguin is and all sorts of things and keep everybody happy. So we get information from them, and then basically I hand out assignments or locations based on what the predictions are. And sometimes our predictions are really good and we're confident. So I know that, you know, I've got 8 people or 10 people or 5 different teams of people sent out across the world. Sometimes we're not so confident, so we have to send people to areas or they have 2 or 3 penguins to check on. And then we sort of put people in places. And then we start manning the chats and updating the thread with old locations and getting ready for new locations. And then, of course, locking the old thread and opening the new thread for posts. And basically getting the locations up. And that's a week-long thing, is keeping the thread updated with fairly recent location lists, so that if anything changes, so that anyone comes to the thread, they know where the penguins are on any world, or particularly World 60, where we focus.
Right.
And then all throughout the week, we're focusing on the chats, working on those behind the scenes as well, keeping them maintained, keeping the spanners out, you know, answering all the questions, etc.
So the next thing pertains to the tour buses. You mentioned that you have 2 tour buses that leave on Penguin Reset Night. Tell me yep. just a little bit about those.
The Penguin tours. Well, we were finding, you know, people that just wanted to trail behind, you know, and they wanted to follow people, or we would constantly get offers in RFCs, you know, can someone take me around to all the penguins? I'll pay you, you know, things like that. And we just realized there was such a demand for it. And we had some of our ranks, some of the players who just said, hey, I'll take you around. And it kind of developed into tours, which are quite structured now. And we call them our tour buses. We have separate FCs for those, a separate thread. They've been in operation for several years now. And basically, you meet at a predetermined spot. For example, it was Shanty Pass this week. And then once reset starts, they travel around to all 10 penguins. Usually Wild is a separate, they'll do that separately.
And, right.
You know, that's it, your own work, yeah. if you choose to. And then we even have an express tour. So if you want even faster experience, you can go on the express bus. One of our ranks runs and takes you. It's a really super fast run around. But the tour buses are fun, and you get to do it in a group. And if it's just you by yourself and you're not so familiar with other locations or the penguins, or you're not so fond of being in the busy chats, you can go on the buses. And like I said, they always have reclining seats and snacks. And yeah, it's just a lot great. Of fun. Yeah, and we have dedicated ranks and players that love to help out. And they there's a whole team of them. And it's quite structured, and they've done a fantastic job of running these tour buses. And players love them every week.
I'm going to have to agree with you on that, because, I mean, just to get this many people to be interested in doing something like this for a group in an online game where there's no, you know, real benefit aside from helping people to it. This is just a really great thing about the RuneScape community. And it's something that I've seen over the years many times. And I think I want to say is really unique to the game community that we have here. Really a great thing. So just a couple more little ones. So suppose I see a penguin on World 60 or somewhere else in maybe one of your chats. And I'm not exactly a member of the penguin group. I haven't been, you know, involved with any of your operations. Should I try and trap this, or is that something that should be left to you guys?
Oh, no, God, no. It's open to everyone. And we constantly stress that. It doesn't have to be one of the ranks, or, you know, you must be part of the team. Anyone who spies or helps out or reads the thread, you're part of the team, is how I see it. I've always believed that. And if you want to help out with the penguin, we love having people get involved. So absolutely get involved. For sure, call out for help or say, hey, I just found this bush wandering around. You know, can someone help me, or what do I do with it, or why is it here? And every week we get people saying things like that in the chats, and you'd be amazed again at how many people will come running to help you. And especially if it's some of our ranks who are a little more versed in movement and traps and such, and have been around for a while, they'll certainly know all the jargon and all the ins and outs, and they can help with more of the details. But most regular hunters will know how to shove a penguin back in a room, or shut the door on it or something. And most people do. Okay. You constantly hear of that. Oh, penguin just got out. I'm going to shove it back in. Oh, it's in, you know. And so, we've got that experience of like throwing the farmer into the pig pen in Draenor to, you know, feed from him, things like that. So
we've how all exactly, got the skills. Just give me a quick overview of how you can essentially shepherd a penguin where you want it to go.
Basically, you block it. You block it from certain movements. Again, it gets quite complex and detailed in terms of how a penguin or an NPC moves. But that's, you basically act as blocking. And you can use some pets, like for example, a platypus or a tooth creature, which you'll almost always see trappers carrying around with them. Those block as well. So you can become a square blocker with a pet. And you basically stop a penguin from moving where you don't want it to go. And so you sort of shepherd it, as you said, into the area or into the region that you want. However, penguins have minds of their own, as we all know, or anyone who's ever tried to trap one. And so you have to work with that as well. But it certainly can be done for all the movement we've done with them.
All right. I was told that you guys once trapped 6 penguins in Relica. Is that the largest trap, the craziest trap you guys have ever done?
Once? we've done that pretty regularly. And Relica Cowpen is a great spot for doing what we call multi-herds. And that's in a week when you have roamer penguins. So penguins that aren't contained, for example, Lunar Isle, can't get off the island. So it's a contained penguin.
Right.
But something like a Feldip penguin, he can get all the way to, you know, Sears into Taverly. They can just freely roam because there's nothing stopping them. So when we have roamers, we do multi-herds. We used to put them in Yanil Wall. That was the first place we ever did a multi-herd. We had 6 penguins in there. But the wall is, because of the door and so many people coming in and out, they get out very quickly. And then you suddenly have 4 rocks wandering around. Right. And you don't know who's who. So the cow pen is, lately, it's been the trap of choice for multi-herds. But 6 so far is the maximum we've ever had. Yeah.
All right.
We're waiting for the day of 10.
Yeah, that would definitely be interesting to see, and I think would probably be worthy of a YouTube video or a post showing that. So,
yeah, we post Reddit and YouTube. There's been a lot of things when we do the multi-herds. And just to throw in there, this month with the road trip, the Mega Duck. Do you know about the
right.
Mega Duck?
Yep, yep.
Yeah, we moved the Mega Duck into the animal wall with the pink. Just for the hell of it, yeah. I kind of yelled out to the team that night. I'm like, let's move it to the wall, you know, because we had to move it down to Ooglog. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah, threw it in the wall, yeah. But why not, right?
Yeah.
So we had a duck in the wall as well. With penguins.
That must have been quite the sight.
One of the craziest. I think that's one of the craziest we've done, yeah.
Very nice. Is there anything else you'd like to throw in about how Team Penguin works?
Basically, we work with everyone helping, with the cooperation of everyone. And it doesn't matter if you just call out one penguin location in chat or you post on the thread a penguin location on any world, because the thread's for all worlds, or if you guard a penguin for 10 minutes, or if you show someone away in Elflands, you know, where the penguin is. It's everyone, you know, helping out and cooperating, which I mentioned already. That's how we work. It's not a certain group of people. I mean, certainly people who are more dedicated, for sure, are penguin addicts, but it's everyone. And we wouldn't be here today, you know, with 300 threads, if all the players hadn't supported and helped and cooperated and worked together. So it's everyone doing it. So that's how we work.
Excellent. And that is the way something should work in RuneScape, and as we already have mentioned, it just goes to show the dedication of this community.
Mm-hmm.
All right, yeah. So two final things before we close off. The ghost penguin, is it difficult to find?
Oh, God, the ghost penguin. Yeah, it is. It can be, I should say. It can be difficult to find. Recently, with the Fate of the Gods quest, there was a post-quest reward, which was Sliske's gift. If anyone's done that, I won't give away any spoilers. But it was specifically mentioned by JMods that they made that reward to help find the ghost penguin. And what the reward is that you don't have to wear the Ring of Visibility in order to see the ghost NPCs from the Shadow Realm,
right,
which includes the ghost penguin. So that makes it a lot easier to find, because now that you don't have to have the ring on, you can be doing anything in RuneScape and you might stumble across it. You might not as well. But and of course, we have an FC to help out with that. We also have a thread for the ghost penguin, the 11th Penguin Spy. And those give all sorts of information. It's on how to spot it as a solo hunter, as a group hunter, you know, with your friends, etc. So there's all sorts of ways to find it.
All right.
It's a sneaky penguin, that's for sure.
Yeah, I can imagine so. And I mean, it was probably one of the hardest ones to find, I'd imagine, before Sliske's gift. But it's probably gotten maybe a smidgen easier now.
I should just mention as well that Mod Nancy, again, the original JMod curator of Penguin for the Penguin Quest, she purposefully made it really, really difficult. Again, because she kind of learned, you know, that we'd gotten kind of good at finding penguins and trapping them and herding them and moving them and such. I mean, it was all in you know, good humor and such, and she enjoyed it and got involved with it. But she purposely said it was to make it really, really hard to find and to really make it an effort, which it certainly is. But we have thousands of players every week that still come to find it. Those three extra points are kind of nice. But letting it walk on water and go into cliffs, that was kind of nasty. But
yeah.
Thanks, Mod Nancy, for making it interesting. Yeah, so we all get to curse the ghost penguin. But again, it just adds one more, you know, interesting aspect to penguins.
One more element of fun. All right.
Yeah.
And one thing I was surprised with last night is the weekly song that you close out your reset meetings with. Tell me a bit about that.
Oh, where did that grow from? It's called the Trample Song. I started different things. I used to get the all the helpers who came into the reset meeting to repeat after me things. Then I tried a chant, and then I tried a bunch of different things. And it's kind of morphed into this over the years. The trample song, basically you pick a tune and you scream out any lyrics you want about trampling. The idea behind it is that when you're doing reset, I should say reset on its own is a special beast. I mean, it's very different from the rest of the week. It's the highest volume of players. When you're standing with a new penguin that's just spawned, you suddenly look up and you see hordes of dots coming towards you on the minimap. It can be a little daunting for new players or new helpers. And we always warn the new helpers, you know, and we say, you're about to be trampled. Or when someone calls out a location of a penguin that nobody's known where it was for a while, or a ghost, for example, you just get trampled by all these players. You come to spy this penguin. So we've always joked saying, you know, footprints on your back, and et cetera. And it can be frustrating, especially if you've just spent 20 minutes getting that penguin to a certain spot and suddenly everyone comes and tramples you. And what many people don't realize is that trampling or running over a player breaks what we call the player and means then the penguin can run through you. So they're no longer a blocker. So when you're blocking and someone walks on you, you've broken the block and a penguin can go straight through you. So that can be very frustrating if you're trying to track. And I tried to, the idea of it was I was trying to counter those frustrations, and I wanted to make sure that the helpers were, you know, first and foremost, having fun. Because it's reset.
Yeah.
It's penguins. We're playing an online game. You're chasing a crate with flippers. You know, like, this is supposed to be fun.
Yep.
Don't get too caught up in it. And so that's what I wanted people to remember, to relax, have fun with it. Look, you're going to be trampled. It's just a given. Now every week they scream at the top of their lungs, whatever lyric and tune they want, and they come up with some crazy lyric. It's wonderful to see each week. And everybody has to sing. Anybody new, you know, you're required to throw in a few words. And it's a lot of just trample, 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 and I'm going to get trampled, and trample to the right, trample to the left, things like that. And yeah, so we just get out our frustrations. And then we go off to the spotlights.
Yeah, I will say that was it was definitely one of the more surprising things, because I mean I was just there observing, and I didn't know that was going to happen, but it made complete sense after the fact.
So it's but I do warn people, when you're new to the meetings, I always say you're gonna have to sing. When the singing begins, you have to sing. That's sort of one of the little rules.
And
I do believe you sang.
Yeah, I did. And that's what makes it great.
Yeah,
excellent.
It's a lot of fun.
Yes, well,
this should always be
fun. Yeah, always fun first. So let's just wrap this up by giving a list of the chat channels, I guess. You said you have a good number of them. They're probably linked on the forum thread, aren't they?
They're absolutely on our first post of the thread. On page one, we have actually four FCs for penguin hunting. W60 Pengy, P-E-N-G-Y, is dedicated to ghost hunting. So we keep that for ghost hunting. We do call the ghost in all our other chats. So our main chat that's used, that is in operation 24/7, is World 60 Pengs. And that's W-O-R-L-D 60 Pengs with an S. And then we have two overflow chats. They're mainly just used for special events and for reset night. And then we have our tour bus chats, and we have various other chats. We got monkey chats. We've got everything. So,
all right. That sounds pretty good. So for anybody wondering, you can just head on over to the link on the forums to the current week's topic. You can find that at update.rsbnb.com, and I believe you can also follow Team Penguin on Twitter at Team Peng.
That's right, we have Twitter, absolutely, and we post our locations on the Twitter. We post our locations on all the major fan sites. We update them all every week with the list, and we have it posted on our clan forum, the list as well.
definitely been a pleasure having you on the show, and I'm sure we've spurred some interest in penguin hunting from our community and maybe the wider community in general. And that's always good to, you know, just have a nice social experience and make some new friends and bag some experience from it.
And to sing. And,
yes,
and a chance
indeed.
To sing. And, yes, of course, of course. Might not be a sea shanty, but it's a penguin song. But absolutely, yeah. If anyone's interested, we welcome everyone. And as I mentioned, there's so many different aspects. There's something for everyone. But just basically to enjoy it. And thank you having me on.
Not a problem. Thank you for joining us once again. And that was Canada Girl, leader of Team Penguin.
Anyway, welcome back. And now we can move on to the Elf City. We have some new secrets that are being revealed. And wow.
You seem to enjoy this week's design document, didn't you?
If I can open it. Chrome, there we go. All right, so yeah, we had some interesting things with the Slayer Monster and Slayer Master, didn't we, Shane?
Yeah, Iworth and Cadurn, the melee and magic elf clans, rightfully focusing on melee and Slayer in Iron and Magic and Cadurn. A level 85 Slayer Master, among other things, featuring targets that people actually want to kill, removing the most canceled Slayer creatures. So things that you won't find on here, like the Scabarites, the Warp Tortoises, and stuff like that. Pretty much everything on this list is good. Spectres, Abyssal Demons, yes. Eru, Aquanites, Avian Seas, Black Demons, Black Dragons, Bloodvelds, Blue Dragons, Chrysom Automatons, Dark Beasts, Desert Strike Worms, Elf City Elves, Fire Giants, Ganodermic, Gargoyles, Greater Demons, Grotworms, Hellhounds, Ice Strike Worms, Iron Dragons, Jungle Strike Worms, Calphites, Mithril Dragons, Muspa, Mutated Dinkos, Nihil, Order of Ascension Monsters, Steel Dragons, and Water Fiends.
And a Slayer Master has a random chance of offering to play a soloed Slayer challenge. And this is required if you want to get a completionist cape.
Yeah, that's
Isn't
good.
It, Shane?
Yeah, I mean, these things and these various bosses around RuneScape are something that I think most completionist players will have fought before, so there's no real problem in including this. Basically...
I think for most people, I think the challenge may be the debuff.
Oh, yeah. It basically debuffs you like Dominion Tower once per boss, depending on what you're doing. So,
anyway, what happens is the first you have a bunch of monsters that you fight mostly in you fight solo. King Black Dragon, Queen Black Dragon, Dagger Knight King, Calphite Queen, monsters in God Wars Dungeon, and High Level Mole. Okay. And so what you can do is they'll actually drop a dark crystal. You need this dark crystal will actually make you weaker. So you have a chance of reducing damage to magic melee range. An item that you are wearing is considered useless or is empty. And the damage you receive on the player is increased. And you know, if you do this, you get a huge amount of Slayer XP, but most people already have 99 even going for this anyway. And it's a way to, unlimited changes to their max skilled PVM teleports, which don't know what that is exactly.
Basically, what you can do, there's a portal that you can go through in this area, and you can calibrate it to go to one of the boss creatures in RuneScape, any of these that are listed. So while you're doing it, you can basically set the teleport to be either of these without the charge, because normally there is a charge, or there's going to be a charge in the Elf City when you want to do that. So that's what that means. To me, this kind of felt like Dominion Tower, and I mean, it's nice to see a different twist on Slayer, but when I read this, I felt like I'd just seen it before. So I don't know how everybody else feels out there, but it just kind of felt like that. And maybe with a Slayer twist, it'll be different enough.
I think you and I, Shane, we need to We need to learn how to solo bosses, don't we?
Yeah, that'd be good, but I mean, I'm really not that much of a bosser in RuneScape. The tick rate is the main reason, but that's a topic for another day. One thing that really jumped out...
That's a topic for you every week.
Well, depends on what the update is, but one thing that really jumped out at me was the changes to thieving in this. You know how when you thieve an NPC in the rest of the world, you get stunned and damaged, right?
Mm-hmm.
So rather than doing that, there's going to be a chance of spotting the player. And if you get spotted by one of these elves, you won't be able to pickpocket in that area for 20 minutes. So that, I think that's a good way of thieving. And ultimately, it'll hopefully bring pickpocketing back into the realm of usefulness. And I'm just going to say that after reading this document, it has provided reason for me as to why I don't want to get level 99 in a bunch more skills. Because if I'm 99, I'm not going to be able to reap the benefit from these elven training methods. So, sure, I'll take skills to 90, but beyond that, I think it's much more important to wait for these.
Yes, and it was spotted, no elf of that elf family can be pickpocketed for 20
yes.
minutes. So I guess they have little mini clans within the clan. What's the other thing?
The Max
there's
Guild?
Also a bunch.
The Max Guild?
Okay. You can talk about it.
Oh, okay. I thought you were just trying to remember something, but if you have something else, we can talk about that briefly.
Well, I think they're making some new batches for some magic and range are coming out in the future, but we'll see when that happens. Some new pictures of the Elven City and some new crystal weapons, too.
Yeah. Hopefully they'll be higher than tier 75. Which they should be.
We'll see. I like the little trident staff.
Oh, okay. That's what that is. Nice. One more thing before we move on from this. The Max Guild. This is where the Max Guild is going to be. To enter, you'll need 99 in any skill or a quest cape. And once you're inside, they'll sell the various skill capes for 99,000 GP, and there'll be 27 flagpoles that you can raise based on if you have 99 in that skill. And then there's going to be an interior of the Max Guild, which you'll actually be able to go into, but in order to do that, you'll need to be all maxed out. And this is where that portal is going to be. So, and then, finally, there's the Completionist Throne, where basically a person who has a completionist cape or trimmed completionist cape will be able to sit on this and it'll cap all their skills to 100. And basically it means you have completed RuneScape and therefore you can sit on the throne.
Yeah.
We won't be nice. There anytime soon, will we?
Completionist cape? Okay. Well, Shane, if you want to share my account and you go on the Castle Wars at nighttime and I go Castle Wars in the morning, we should get it done in about 3 years.
No, that's okay. That's against the rules.
No, it's not. Remember, I got rid of that.
Yeah, well, let's wait until we get some more official word on that before we talk about that. Anyways, this week's polling update. We got a new Dragonstone poll pertaining to the Elder God quest. Which one did you choose?
I don't mind.
Oh, okay. I chose research.
I was thinking about. I thought of that, but I thought I would follow you because you always said choose the one that will never win. See, you're breaking your little your little rule, aren't you, Shane?
Maybe. Bic in the Oceans 20%, Full in the Tazar 17%, Wen in the Dwarves 7%. And researching Elder Gods, 36%. I think most people are choosing researching the Elder Gods because we don't know anything about them currently. We just have a vague idea of where they are. And I think the people who are doing these quests ultimately want to find out more about them. What do they mean? What do they stand for? What are their powers?
Well, if you kind of think about it, we don't know much of anything, any of these. I think the Elder Gods are just the one that resonates with more people.
Yeah.
Except, I mean, what do you know about Beak of the Ocean?
Nothing.
What do you know about the Dwarf and Wind? What do you know about the Tazar and Fool?
Oh, and by the way,
what's up?
Beak and Wen were Master Quest. Fool and Tazar was Grandmaster. And researching the Elder Gods is an intermediate. So that one's a bit easier. And, you know, one of the things I'm thinking as to that contributed with the Tazar one being where it is because it's got a requirement of birthright of the dwarves for one thing. And I think some people have bad memories about the combat in that quest. So they don't want to see Tazar and Grandmaster anywhere close together for a short time, you know, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And dwarves, well, I don't think people are that interested in the dwarves being at single digits, but we'll just have to wait and see. What did you guys vote for? Tell us. And then finally, more lighthearted poll. Where do you want to get your RuneScape game news? 60% say the RS website and 26% say in-game. And the rest of them are single digits that I'm not going to go into, but it's official forums, fan sites, social media, videos and live streams, or I just log in.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's the official website. And I'd like to think that...
Same here.
The majority of people who listen to the show get their news from either RSBNB or RSBNB Update. So.
Yeah.
All right.
For the same thing as you.
Yeah. So the Cloak of Seasons is here. This is kind of like the Crown of Seasons from last year. Tradable rare. Cloak of Spring, Summer, Autumn, and Winter. Combine them all and you get the Cloak of Seasons, and this results in a tradable rare.
Tradable rare.
Yeah.
This still looks better than the fish mask.
Oh, don't remind me of that thing. Anyways, how do we feel about another tradable rare coming from Treasure Hunter?
Go for it.
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem with it. Because you can also get components by practicing herblore, woodcutting, farming, and firemaking. So it's not like you're being forced to do challenges, forced to buy Treasure Hunter keys. And I think that with it being available for a week, people are going to be able to get one, or if not all of these, because let's remember, this is supposed to be a tradable rare. R-A-R-E, rare. So that's just my perspective on it. And I remember talking many times in the previous years, that tradable rares need to come back to the game, and it looks like Jagex is doing that. It just is a sign that, you know, people are grown up enough that they can handle something being tradable that was only available for a certain period of time. So I'm happy about that. I don't think we'll see these get anywhere astronomical like the party hats, but who knows where it'll be in 10 years, you know? Mm-hmm. Anyways, I'm going to try and get one. How about you?
I'm not going to be able to afford it anyway, and the odds of me getting it is zero to zilch, so...
Yeah, well, you get the seeds like you did last year. You need 600 of each, and I haven't done my Treasure Hunter yet for today, but we'll see. Fingers crossed.
No luck.
Shh. We want all the luck we can get.
You do realize I got better luck in RS than you.
I know. Well,
you did get the P hat thing, didn't you?
The Black Santa hat, yes.
Yeah.
Anyways, final piece of RS news, kind of just a passing mention, But Jagex would like people to vote for RuneFest as the best live webcast. RuneFest Live and Groovy Gecko. So basically, they were nominated for Best Live Webcast in the European Readers' Choice Awards. So you can head on over to the link found at runescape.com and vote for RuneFest if you liked what Jagex did during the RuneFest last October. I know it was definitely nice seeing all the stuff curated and put together for those of us who could not attend, and it definitely did make it feel like we were there. So all in all, a good thing. Alrighty. Anything else for you, RS, related this week?
Nope.
Alright.
Nope, no more news.
Well, let us move on to questions. We got 4 audio questions this week, one short of the usual goal. The first one is from the RR Man.
Hello, Shane and Tricky. It's RR Man here, and I'm finally back for another audio question. This week, I just quickly wanted to ask a few tiny things. One, when you're doing the kingdom, you know how you get the approval rating back up to 100%. Do you have to do that every day so that you get the most resources? Or do you just go there each week, get it up to 100, and then collect? For some reason, I've always thought that you had to go there every day. These new ancient combat spells, are they worth using in Slayer, or are they worth using at bosses, or both? Does the damage done to your player character turn out to be, like, you know, 3-fold, 4-fold out on the opponent? I haven't actually tested them out myself yet, but that was a question I was wondering. And finally, do you think that the healing aura, that or the gem which you place down and people can heal from it, do you reckon that's going to bring down the cost of any of the foods? Because I was enjoying fishing rocktails heading towards 99, and I'm making bank. Peace out, guys.
Okay, so you want to take the kingdom one?
Kingdom, you just do it right before you gather. It's kind of a group consensus that you just get 100% before you talk to the advisor to get your stuff. Also good to have maxed out your money before doing it too.
Yeah. Two further notes on that. The kingdom collects for 30 days maximum, so make sure you go once every 30 days. And in order to max out your money, you need 750,000 GP plus 75,000 per day.
As if you did all the quests and whatnot.
Yes. Otherwise, it's 550 if you've just done the first quest.
Mm-hmm.
And now the Life Crystal, as I said, it's an interesting game mechanic. And it's more of, I view as, you know, adding a bit of resistance to the damage you're taking so that the damage you take is offset. It's not a spike heal, so yeah, you will still need food. I don't see food prices going down because of this, just because, like I said, it would take around 15 seconds to heal around 2,000 life points for me, which I can do that in one click with a rock tail. So that's how I feel about that. Okay. Thank you, RR Man. Next one is from Parnassius.
G'day, Shane and Treki. Parnassius here. With Jagex trialing the life point removal from armor and returning to the old strength bonus in favor of the critical chance, do you think this will bring back a more widely spread use of potions in the game, such as Ceridomen brews and overloads? It would be good to see Herblore made relevant again. It's a shame when they introduce updates that make other skills pretty much obsolete. Hopefully this will see an increase in activity with the potions if it does come in. Until the next time, happy scaping to you all.
I want to say yes for the strength boost that, you know, strength will be made more powerful. But I have my doubts for Ceridomen brews and their life point healing, just because Ceridomen brews heal a set amount, it doesn't scale with life points, and now 800 life points really isn't all that much, considering a shark is going to be 1600. So for each Ceridomen brew 4 dose, that's effectively 2 sharks in that one thing. And I mean, yeah, okay, maybe it'll be good, but honestly, I think the spike healing of fish is just going to be the way to go.
Hmm. Sharks are great.
Yeah.
Sharks,
I mean,
and Rocktails are great.
I completely agree with these, with the issue of Sarah and Brew and whatnot not being as useful as it used to be. Like, it boosts your defense, which is nice, but it's not a reliable heal based on how much you get hit. You can just do that now with Rocktail and have a brief lockout on using abilities. So I don't see that coming back in the current state of the beta, even though it would be nice to see that as the case. And Sarah Doman Brew being level 81 Herb Lord, it is really painful to see that. So I feel the pain because that's how I leveled up Herb Lord to 99. Sarah Doman Brews based on just getting Toad Flax on my own and through the kingdom and whatnot. And it's not a nice thing to see. Let's get that changed. That would be a good thing to do.
And also, usually we do a porch and we get a ton of spice, in which spice can use with Rocktails to make Rocktail soup, in which case you can heal even more. So Rocktails are staying for a good long time. And they're good food.
Yeah. But let's try and make these, make the Super Serodon Brew more useful, because, I mean, a defense boost is good, but healing, I don't know. Maybe the Serodon Brews ought to be on the order of sharks in terms of the amount they heal, at least the super variety, because that way then you're going to have a choice. You can get a nice heal and defense boost with the Serodon Brew, or you can have a super spike heal with Rocktail Soup. So let's say Sharks heal 1,600. Let's up the Super Sarah Doman Brews to, what, 1,200? Sound good? Okay, that would probably be the best of both worlds. You can have the lower heal with the defense boost or the higher spike heal. Just 800 just doesn't feel like enough when we're talking about an 11,000 life point character. All right. Thank you, Parnassius. I completely agree with you that it is painful to see that. And our next audio question is from
101 Duck One, or his new name,
Colton.
Hello there, hosts. This is 101 Duck One here. Or if you've seen recently, I have actually changed my in-game name to my real life first name with a space between the syllables, Colton. Now, I'm not sure if you guys know or not, but I've always sort of been against the whole changing names thing in RS, but I had to make an exception just this once when I actually noticed that this name was free. My question for you all this week is, why did you make your RSN what you made it? Additionally, being such longtime veterans, would you ever consider changing your display name if your real-life name was ever available? Personally, it took a lot of thought, and I really have to admit, part of me, just a small part of me, still misses the name that little 9-year-old Colton decided to name his character back in 2004. 101 Duck One. Well, thanks for answering my question, and for the awesome show. Take it easy, guys.
I feel the same about name changes, and before they added the user notes feature, it was very, very hard to keep track of people who would constantly change their names. I'm not a proponent of name changes. I actually think that Jagex should be charging loyalty points to change names, because there are just so many name changes going around. Granted, there is the 30-day time limit, but people just take their name changing a little bit. They abuse the feature a bit. I have seen my friends list change names many times. Sometimes names just change way too quick to see. Even with the 28-day thing, people will change the name, revert it, so you're wondering, why does this person have the little name change thing next to them? I think it could be remedied with a small loyalty point fee. That would probably make it better, in my opinion. But as for me, the only name I would potentially change to, if it ever became available, would just be straight up plain vanilla Shane.
Okay. I never really bothered changing my name. I kept it from the time it was created up to now.
Yeah, and I mean, it's such an easy name to type.
You still failed. We'll never forget that, because you made a big deal about that once.
I know. But yeah, I mean, for people like us, it's kind of iconic, so I don't see myself changing unless I can get that one name, but... And you probably won't either, right?
Probably not. We'll say this, though. If you want to know why we picked our name, you'll just have to listen to all the podcasts in the past, don't you? Wink, wink.
Yes, I'm pretty sure I've gone through that before, and I think you did yours a couple weeks back. So you can find mine somewhere, or you can ask around on RSBNB. Someone will know, and they'll tell you why. Hmm. Alrighty, thank you, 101.1. Next one is from Marumska.
Hello, Shane and Tricky. How you doing? Marumska here. With the month ending now, what task do you think is the hardest for the road trip journal? I found that the one you feed the breadcrumbs to the duck the most difficult, not because of the process of it, but the issue of dealing lag and my end of crappy mouse equipment. So what I did was game the system using my MacBook Pro's trackpad and mouse keys and speedily done it. Anyways, Shane, a little tag on with that first question. Have you found your reaction time decrease? I've certainly found my skills in fighting games decrease, and I'm only 16. And lastly, I'm running out of bank space, and I found the largest tab I have, besides the general miscellaneous stuff, is the farming tab. I seem to have a lot of whatnot. I was wondering, how would I go about cleaning that tab up? What's a good idea to keep and throw away? That's all for this week, and I'll talk to you next time. Worms go out.
So your hardest task?
You go first, Shane.
Oh, okay. The hardest one I did, I would have to say, would be the duck as well, because of the lag. So there's that. But as for ones I skipped that would have been harder, just because of the way the game works, and I don't want to go back to those areas, is the Cabbage minigame, Castle Wars, and Heist, because I have still not been able to get a heist game going based on just the way that the game was set up. So those are ones that I just said, okay, from the very beginning, this one is getting stamped by a JMod. So that's me.
I actually didn't have a hard time with the duck one. I did that the other day, and I did it in 20 seconds, and I was done. I went to Falador Park, and there was a small little pond, and I just fed it all, and I was done.
Oh, yeah. That was also mentioned on the Penguin supplemental that you guys heard earlier. The Mega Duck that can be moved like a penguin. Anyways. I don't want to say my reaction time has gone down. I'll just say it was never that great to begin with. Yours, on the other hand.
What?
I'd imagine what yours would be pretty good, right?
My reaction time? No. Every time I try to do an RS, I do the RS dance. That just makes me worse.
Yeah, and that, of course, is coupled with the way the game works and lag and whatnot. And, you know, we do have the tick rate going for us, because we don't need to be as quick as we do in other games with reaction time and whatnot. So I want to say the tick rate helps us with that. But, I mean, just combat and whatnot and lag, that is a major issue for me. So, oh, there we go again on the tick rate. Huh.
Told you.
All right, how do you clean bank space?
I try to figure out what I can dump into my house, because usually there's something you can do. What I can destroy in order to pick it up by the guy in Drainer Village. Other than that, it's like, buy more bank space! Woo!
Yeah, you can do that with loyalty points now, so that's not too bad. But in regards to farming bank space, what I would say to do for that is to just look at your farming tab and say which of these give the lowest experience and which of these will not be profitable to plant and harvest. So this is effectively will mean that you'll keep most of the herb seeds aside from the lower four. The only tree seeds you keep will be the top three of each, I'd say. So maple, yew, and magic, and palm, papaya, and pineapple. Those ones are always good. Allotment seeds, watermelons, those are always good to have. Strawberries, I like those too. Snake grass. And then pretty much any of the high-level farming stuff you want to keep, because, I mean, you can get XP from it, but just don't get XP from the ones that give XP and another skill from harvesting. So that's a quick way of looking at it, sort of by experience, and then which ones aren't profitable. I think we're good unless... It. Yeah. All right. Read the last one.
Well, I gotta read the last one. Okay, this one's from QWC. What skill do you think needs an update on the way we gain XP other than construction? I personally think that somebody needs an update. And you're gonna say smithing, Shane, aren't you?
Yeah, smithing is in there. Smithing needs to be useful again, and I'm confident that when invention comes out next year, we'll see smithing be useful. So I want to say I'm going to wait to see if we want to wait for that, just because I've heard that there might be some good smithing stuff in invention. But on the whole, I'd say any bank standing skill that needs an update. So herb lore, summoning, as you said, fletching, just skills where you just stand in a bank and use the materials. Crafting would be another one. Need an update just to, you know, make them more interactive in much the way that the newer skills are. So I think that would be good to see. Not to mention making crafting profitable again, because that is pretty expensive.
You're going to say smithing. I think summoning could use a little bit, but in a way, it's easy to train summoning if you can actually get the charms.
Yep. I know we've seen millions of summoning experience before on bonus XP weekends and whatnot, so summoning is quick, providing you have the ingredients. I know one thing everybody is looking for is a construction update, because that skill is pretty much stale. You build your house once and you're done. And I know you and I used to like putting houses together, and you used to like seeing what everyone else had. So, construction as well. Alrighty. I think that's it for questions this week then. I just want to say that we were one question off from doing a live show next week. One audio question off, rather. Because if we get 5 audio questions in a given week, the next week's show will be a live show. So keep that in mind if you guys are submitting audio questions. We had 4 come in this week. One more. Next week would have been a live show. And if you want to send those in, just email them to questions@rsbnb.com or send them over Skype to the username rsbnbupdate. And finally, they can be phoned in to the Google Voice number if you live in the Americas, to 571-572-2632. Alrighty, what do we got for tech news this week?
First off, YouTube may buy Twitter. Sorry, Twitch. Rewind. YouTube may buy Twitch.
Yeah, so Twitch is rewind, that gaming Shane. Service that pretty much everyone knows about.
I think it's a terrible idea if it goes through.
Why is that?
Twitch is there for us to stream videos, and I can't see, you know what happened if Google gets their hands on Twitch? Everything's going to be connected through Google Plus. Do you really think that people want their name out, their real name out, when, you know, they say something like, "You stupid, you suck, you stupid, beep, 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 beep." Think about it. And I can't see, you know, you have someone who is, or maybe call like the Deathbringer, and his name is, you know, Stacy.
Okay, I see. Yeah, and I mean, that's been a really contentious thing with all of Google, specifically YouTube, you know, needing the Google Plus to be an account. And, you know, there's been kind of some indications lately that Google might be loosening that restriction up a bit, just based on some things that we've seen in the YouTube UI and whatnot, but nothing outright mentioned. I mean, the purchase price would be $1 billion for Twitch, and the reason behind it is that Twitch just feels like it can't grow, and YouTube is the logical place to go, because you know how many hours of YouTube content is served up per minute? Quite a bit. And YouTube definitely has the infrastructure. And if Twitch was allowed to proceed somewhat independently, I'm sure it could retain much of its charm.
And, you know, if you bring it onto Twitch, yeah, people will make, well, I guess gamers who stream will make a bit more money with YouTube and everything else. But I can't see, you know, people connecting YouTube and that. I mean, think of YouTube comments, how bad they are. I can throw that onto Twitch with live feed, and you're asking for a bomb to go off.
Yeah, and I mean, part of it could be is that YouTube really wants to be in the live streaming marketplace. Because there's lots of places that offer you the ability to live stream. YouTube, you can, but it's not as prominent as other places like Ustream or Justin TV. So I think if Twitch came into the fold of YouTube, they might be able to provide that as an aspect of YouTube and have a Twitch as it would be, not only for gaming, but maybe other things as well. Say a Twitch for news, a Twitch for who knows what, home cooking, you know? Basically allow YouTube to create online TV channels, with Twitch being the gaming channel, but apply that same methodology to anything you can think of. So that is where this can go. It'll be definitely interesting to see if it goes through and what the final price will be. Alrighty. So next up, OMG Adorkable. So apparently adorkable is a word that has been taken by Twitter users. The Collins Dictionary, which is a fairly common English word dictionary, looks online for new words to put into its dictionary. So adorkable is one. You'll know that selfie is on there. Vague booking. Gaberhood.
Mm-hmm.
And duck face. Apparently that's the traditional pouting facial expression used in selfies. So there's going to be a whole bunch of these words, and there's going to be a winning word announced in June, and that will go into the print edition of the dictionary coming out this October. I don't know. I don't like this.
English language is going downhill.
Yeah, I mean,
tweeting should not be part of the English language.
Here's some of the top ones. Adorkable, Felfie, which is a farmer selfie, Fatberg, No Makeup Selfie, Duckface, Gaberhood, Euro Maiden, Vague Booking, and Fractivist. Oh my god. Yeah, let's not put these into dictionaries. We don't need to take the English language in that direction, certainly with probably three of those words that are on that list. Jeez. I can't believe it. I just can't believe that. Would seem that dog agrees too.
That dog, I want to kill it and eat it if I get the chance. I would eat that dog, Shane. Put it in a crock pot, boil it overnight. I guarantee you every Asian within 30 miles will smile and come on over.
All right, last piece of tech news. Surface 3 Pro, or Surface Pro 3 from Microsoft. $799, 12-inch screen. Running a Intel Core i7 processor. I'm going to admit, this looks interesting.
Yeah, I saw the ads for it. It was nice. See, they're kind of upgrading everything as they're moving along.
Yeah, they moved to a 3:2 aspect ratio rather than 16:9. I think that actually makes sense for tablets, just given, 16:9 feels too wide when you're holding it. But an i7, you can definitely do a lot with that, and it is lighter than a MacBook Air. So, definitely interesting to see Microsoft innovating on something like this, and the only question I don't know is if people want a hybrid laptop tablet when it seems like the iPad is selling so well, and general reception to Windows 8 is just blah.
iPad has been in there for a while. It took them, Microsoft, too long to make one.
Exactly. And this is what I said about Microsoft before. Microsoft has these great ideas, except when it's in a market where one of these ideas exists, it's just overlooked because there's something better, something faster, something simpler that people have already moved to. So, I mean, Microsoft just needs to focus on its implementation, and then one day they'll do something great that's on time, much like the Xbox One. Which, by the way, there's a good link in the forums this week to a piece on the Xbox One from one of our Informer writers that everybody should go have a read. Anyways, well, I'm not getting a Surface, but I do say it looks interesting. All right. Anything else on this tech news for you?
No, not really. Give it a try. Never know.
Okay. Get your life paddles out for the skill of the month, please. Have a look at it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we have Bletherskite currently in first place with 25.6 million experience gained. Second place, the RR Man with 1.5, and third place, Pronasius with 1.4. 7 days left in the month. I think we are pretty much done. It's pretty impressive,
yeah.
Though.
Yeah. Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. I wonder how much time one needs to spend on RuneScape in a day to pull in that much Slayer XP. Looks like he's pulling in roughly between 1 million and 1.5 million on average, spiking up to almost 2 million yesterday. So, really astounding, crazy, to say the least. Yeah.
Crazy old man.
Okay.
Okay.
And as I mentioned, we are still looking for Informer writers, so if you're interested in writing for RSBNB Informer, there is a link that you can find at update.rsbnb.com to the topic where you can find out how to send your application in. Basically, for your application, we ask you to write a RuneScape piece that's about 750 words long minimum about anything in RuneScape that you want. And if you are the lucky candidate, it will go up as your first Informer article. And of course, you just private message them to us on the forums. And if you have any questions at all about what you should write for your article, for your application, just contact me and I will give you some guidance in much the same way that I give our writers guidance as to what they should be writing about month by month.
Okay, then. Come apply, write for us.
Yeah, it's a fun thing to do. And as I said, I did one this week pertaining to the Xbox One and Kinect, and how Kinect is actually pretty important for the Xbox experience. Okay. You have a pick?
Right. And you did.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. I just thought I'd check in case, you know, something came up. But nonetheless, I do have a pick this week. What?
Is it... No, I have no peak.
Yeah, that's okay. Whoops. Wrong button there. Alrighty. So, this week's pick is something that might be useful to some people, and it might not be something to use, something useful for people. It is essentially a way of finding interesting domain names for projects that you're working on. It's called Domainer. DOMAI.NR. And let's just say you're looking for a domain name that comes up nicely as one, you can enter something in. So for instance, if you entered in RuneScape, it shows that runesca.pe is available. So somebody could potentially go and purchase this domain and have something that just says RuneScape in the domain name. And it does this based on putting things together, just based on words and, you know, other directories and whatnot, to just have the URL to be readable. It's kind of the same way that Delicious used to work, del.icio.us. Of course, I mean, basically whatever you're looking for, you can find it in here and pick it up. So it's a good thing to have. And it's like I said, it's not something that everybody's going to use every day, but when I'm looking for a domain pertaining to something, or I want to see if a certain word is available, I just go to this this website and we see what we got. And this is how I actually got our family domain name. I just combined some stuff and there we go. So, Domainer, nice little web service.
Yay.
So, what you been up to?
All right. Let's see. I actually managed to get 97 Slayer this week, which is good.
Oh, nice.
I did a little bit of engineering and sinkhole. Not enough. I have two more road trip stuff to do. I've been kind of busy with everything. And I'm at the Citadel trying to max up. That's about it.
Okay. As for me this week, just been doing some divination, decided I'm going to get level 96. I'm around 200,000 XP away, so I'll get that this weekend. But sinkholes are on the agenda, and I've been doing a lot of herb farming as well. Yesterday, I had a herb run that yielded 70 herbs. That's a record.
Very nice.
Yes.
Very, very nice.
And they were dwarf weed too. From a small farming crate. So nice profit there. But that's pretty much it. I also spent some time with the Team Penguin people, as you guys heard earlier in the show. That's on every Tuesday. So link, of course, to that will be in the show notes to find all the Team Penguin info for the threads and whatnot that changes weekly. And, of course, their chat. They're on Twitter at Team Peng. And they're having, or rather had, their 300th Penguin thread party this Saturday. So maybe you guys are at that party right now and listening to the show. If you are, hello and enjoy yourselves there. It was definitely nice spending time with all of you. All right. You good to go?
Yeah, I got nothing else. You guys have a great Memorial Day weekend.
Alrighty, see you next week, everybody, and remember to check out that Informer article on the Xbox One, informer.rsbnb.com.